It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It certainly should be, but somebody should explain how utterly insignificant it is.
This memo answers what I think are really legitimate questions, and I do think the FBI should look at it before it is released. So I want to play face-up poker.
No, I don't want it released yet. I don't. I want somebody who's without a political bias to come in and look at the allegations that I've seen. The way the FBI conducted itself in the Department of Justice bothers me.
No one at the White House has actually seen the memo, so it would be hard for us to make a decision.
All right, that was the big news last night. At 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, the Intelligence Committee voted to release that four-page memo. Now, the memo will be released in 5 days. It can't be released sooner. The president can stop it, or at least if he says he doesn't want it released, then Congress can vote to override that. I think it's a majority that it would require, but we don't think the president's going to stop it. But it's going to take 5 days. According to the statute, they cannot release it before then. Meanwhile, the Democrats, of course, have prepared their own memo and are claiming that it's all false. It's all made up. There's nothing to this. So they prepared their own memo that they say represents their view of the facts. You know, yeah, okay. So the different views of the facts usually to me means you leave things out and you only tell those things that comport to your side of the story. Well, we'll see when this memo comes out exactly what the truth is. And I'm going to spend a great deal of time on that today, but not this minute because there's some other news. I want you to hear from Ed Henry, though, last night. He was on with Martha McCallum, and I think he gave an excellent overview about what's going on here because the other big story, of course, was that Andrew McCabe, we think, was fired yesterday. Let's listen to Ed.
Critics of the president are trying to paint Andrew McCabe's ouster as part of a pattern of the president attacking various people who are investigating him, investigating the White House. But also McCabe may have seen the handwriting on the wall himself about his own conduct during the Obama administration that may be about to spill out because of that memo you mentioned. Specifically, we've learned Chris Wray quietly came up here to Capitol Hill on Sunday to view that Republican memo about Obama administration surveillance of Trump officials. The Daily Beast reporting the memo suggests McCabe was involved in FISA abuse. Specifically, Republicans suggesting McCabe and other officials like the number two at the Justice Department, Rod Rosenstein, may have used that unverified dossier paid for by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign to get FISA warrants to spy on former Trump foreign policy advisor Carter Pate. White House allies have also been exercised by those text messages between FBI officials Peter Strzok and Lisa Page talking about a meeting in McCabe's office that could produce what they called an insurance policy of a Trump probe if somehow he won the election. Now, the president used several tweets to rip McCabe, specifically December 23rd about McCabe's wife running for state office in 2015 with backing from Clinton allies. Quote, how can FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, the man in charge, along with leaking James Comey of the phony Hillary Clinton investigation, including her 33,000 illegally deleted emails, the president tweeted, be given $700,000 for his wife's campaign by Clinton puppets during the investigation? But this afternoon, we also spotted Rosenstein and Ray leaving the White House after a meeting with Chief of Staff John Kelly, who on behalf of the president has been pressuring Attorney General Jeff Sessions to let this Republican memo be released, despite objections from justice and FBI officials. That memo could show wrongdoing by McCabe and others. The other key point is that the Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz is expected to release an explosive report in the next few weeks looking at the handling of the Clinton email matter by McCabe and others. So the big question tonight is when that report hits and this memo that the House Intelligence Committee has now voted to release, if that's released, will there be more resignations at the FBI and the Justice Department?
Okay, Ed Henry, and he's that was a mouthful. You know, this is complicated. It's very complicated, and for those of you trying to follow it, it's a challenge but I'm going to try my best to make it as simple as I can. I know I won't, I'm sure I will not succeed at doing that, but I'm encouraging you to please stay tuned, because the counter offensive by the Democrats, by the left, you know, I really hate to make this a party thing. I just don't think this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of a group of people that want to undermine the Constitution of the United States and take power. This is an absolutely stunning story, and it has nothing to do with party loyalties. I don't think. I mean, you either want this country to run according to the rule of law or you don't. And we can see already that the FBI at the highest levels was lawless, was becoming a law unto themselves. And I don't care what party you're from. That's a problem. Now, the left is going to respond. The left is mostly populated by Democrats. They just happen to be Democrats. The left is responding by creating confusion. They're going to write their other memo. And by the way, they're going to say, and you're going to hear this a little bit later, that the Republicans are going to release their memo, but they won't. They voted not to let us release ours. Well, that's not true. The Republicans decided to let the Democrat memo go through the same process according to the statute that the Republican, I see, they shouldn't even be called that. They should not even be labeled Republican and Democrat memo, but here it is. They set it up in partisan terms. And so they won't let that second memo be released until it is released to be reviewed by all the members of the House, just like the memo, the first memo, but the Devin Nunes memo was released to the entire House before it was released to the public. It isn't released to the public. Then the left's memo, the Adam Schiff memo, was going to have to go through that same waiting period. So the Nunes memo will come out first, and we think it'll either be Friday, it could be Saturday, it could be Sunday, Monday, to count up 5 days whenever they start counting. So and that's huge news. You know, I have to say, I already know, because I've shared with you with our conversations with Joe DeGeneva, that the content of that memo to be released, a lot of it is already can be accessed publicly through just Googling, you know, Inspector General's report. And we'll get into the details of that later. But we know it's going to be much greater than the nefarious actions of the higher echelon of the FBI. It's going to include other agencies. And now we're feeling fairly confident that Rod Rosenstein, who has been running the Justice Department when Jeff Sessions recused himself on the Russian investigation, Rod Rosenstein stepped up to take his place. And it looks as though Rod Rosenstein is going to be in trouble himself when this memo comes out. And hopefully we'll get into that too. You know, I'm going to stop right now with that conversation, because that's what I'm going to talk about for most of the show. And I just want to stop for a second, because tonight is the State of the Union address. You know that, right? The State of the Union address is, I think, look, I'm reading a rundown of it, and some people are concerned that the president he's trying to make a deal with Democrats. So he's going to give sort of a speech. This is what we're thinking. Excuse me. It's going to be embracing to democratic principles, and that'll be a problem for many of us. He's going to emphasize his $1 trillion infrastructure plan to rebuild the country's roads, bridges, ports, and tracks. He's also going to talk about his immigration proposals, which are very controversial and not what he promised. Mike Emanuel actually has a report about that that I want you to hear, and then I'll have a few blanks to fill in. Here it is.
Well, it's amnesty today, many legal immigration reforms tomorrow. It doesn't have workforce verification. And also, it's really an invitation to fraud. It's ripe for fraud, because they're going to allow a lot of adult illegal immigrants to apply under the DACA program to get amnesty.
President Trump rolled out his proposal after meeting with bipartisan lawmakers. And one key Republican says the president's blueprint is a strong start, but predicts limits on legal immigration could trip them up.
The president's proposal of allowing 1.8 million Dreamers a pathway forward with citizenship is a huge step in the right direction. He deserves to have a escrow account to draw upon to secure the wall system, not just a wall. Chain migration and cutting legal immigration in half, those would be very problematic areas.
Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer floated providing money for the border wall, but later said he was pulling it. Some of his most liberal members are taking aim at that part of the president's plan.
Where the bad part comes is the idea of a wall, which I thought was a great idea in the 15th century when China built the Great Wall. Not so smart today when we have technology that is much more effective and more cost-effective in terms of protecting the border.
A bipartisan group of 48 members in the House called the Problem Solvers Caucus is out with a plan of its own. It would allow DACA recipients in the U.S. by June 2012 to become citizens. On security, it would provide $1.59 billion for infrastructure, planning, design, and construction, and $1.123 billion for non-barrier infrastructure. It would eliminate the diversity visa lottery. However, House GOP leaders are not supporting this proposal. One possibility is a temporary DACA extension, along with a temporary government funding package to give all more time. Brett?
All right, that was Mike Emanuel. And of course, I have to say, I am personally extremely concerned about this. Did you hear Lindsey Graham when he's talking about that 1.8 that the president is proposing to legalize and make citizens within 10 to 15 years? Did you hear Lindsey say that that's a good beginning? It's a good starting point? It's amazing. It just boggles the mind. Is there any limit to what this country is supposed to be taking in and absorbing without any kind of care, whether it be and under the guise of, you know, compassion? Where is the compassion for our own citizens? Where is the compassion for our children and their future? And their ability to sustain the debt we have handed them, which is right now at $22 trillion. Who's going to pay for all the benefits for all of the people we are going to legalize and all their parents and their children who have not even come yet? Who's going to pay for that? I'm just asking. Just asking. And by the way, you heard a report at the top of the news today, and I'm going to repeat it, that two DACA, we call them Dreamers, you see, because President Obama labeled them such, and it is stuck. It was a very clever marketing tool, but trust me, it is a word that is being misused unbelievably. Two Dreamers, so-called Dreamers, have been arrested in San Diego over suspicion of human trafficking, human smuggling. I'm not going to go into the details of the report, but I'm just trying to tell you, some of them are, of course, as in any demographic, some people who've come over illegally are probably, besides breaking our law to do that and coming in to take what is not theirs, I'd say that's a problem in terms of character. Would you do that? Would you break into Scotland and, you know, and live off their welfare aid, you know, using another person's identification? Would you do that? And you don't think that's a problem of character? I sort of do. I think that's dishonest. Okay, but I digress. So that may be the only thing that people have done. But how about the fact that we're talking about now giving them citizenship and allowing them to vote within 10 to 15 years, that will change the demographic of this country. And I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about abilities, skills. I'm talking about systems of government, people who are used to big governments, dependent on handouts, used to having some kind of autocrat tell them what to do. They have a different expectation. They don't understand our Constitution, and we planning on absorbing them. All right, so the president will do this, talk about it in his State of the Union address, and we'll be eagerly waiting to see what he has to say, no question about it. Joe Kennedy Jr., or Joe Kennedy III, will be delivering the State of the Union rebuttal. He is the son or the grandson of Robert Kennedy. I wish I had more time to tell you about him. Maybe tomorrow we will. All right, so that's enough for this. The president has a bunch of guests that are going to be sitting in the gallery. Many of them, a couple of them will be, have their children have been killed as a result of MS-13 gang members coming in, you know, so-called Dreamers. Yeah, so they'll be featured in the gallery with Melania. and many other people's wounded veterans, the guy who developed the Cajun Navy, lots of interesting people. So tonight you'll want to watch that State of the Union, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow. So stay tuned. Right, coming up next, we're going to talk about Andrew McCabe and more of the details of that memo. Sandy Rios in the morning.
If you like trips where you have to plan everything, then maybe our tour is not for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Of course, I'm talking about our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, and then a separate trip to Williamsburg, Virginia. And guess what? We take care of everything. All you have to do is, as they say, show up. But we take these spiritual heritage tours twice a year, once in June and once in September. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, who is a historian, will be joining us for both tours, and he will tell you everything you need to know about the places, the times, the events that we will experience on these tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for everything.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Peter's heart must have been heavy. Peter had said to Jesus, "I will lay my life down for you." But when the time for courage came, Peter fled, and Jesus laid his life down. Peter's failure must have been weighing on his heart, but Jesus didn't leave him there. At the end of John, the risen Jesus restores Peter. After breakfast, Jesus asks Peter three times, "Do you love me?" And he responds, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And then Jesus calls him to do two things. First, feed my sheep. And second, Jesus says, "You follow me." And likewise, we're called to be on mission with Jesus, following him wherever he leads. Get daily encouragement from Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
A Southern California history teacher was secretly recorded berating students who wanted to join the military. Gregory Salcido teaches at El Rancho High School. He said members of the military were stupid, called them the lowest of low. The student who filmed the incident was incredibly offended by the teacher's profane rant. He spoke exclusively to me on my radio program.
You know, he wanted to ask me why I wanted to join the military. I told him, "It's a family tradition. It's something I've been wanting to do as a kid." And he ended up saying, "So if it was a family tradition to beat women, would you continue it?"
You can listen to the full interview with the student at toddstarnes.com. The school district is investigating the incident, but the evidence is pretty overwhelming. And it appears this military-hating left-wing school teacher got caught red-handed. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Tonight is that FBI Director Christopher Wray went Sunday and reviewed the four-page FISA memo. The very next day, Andrew McCabe was asked to resign. Remember, Sean, he was planning on resigning in March. That already came out in December. This time, they asked him to go right away. I have been told tonight by a number of sources right now that McCabe may have asked FBI agents to actually change their 302s. Those are the interviews with witnesses. So basically, every time an FBI agent interviews a witness, they have to go back and file a report. Obstruction of justice. This is something that the inspector general is investigating. If that is the case, if this is true, and not just alleged, if this is true, McCabe will be fired.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. So I think maybe because we've had so many personalities in this, you know, you need a flow chart, whether it's Peter Strzok or Lisa Page, Rod Rosenstein or Andrew McCabe. Who are these people? James Comey, Bob Mueller. you know, it gets very confusing. Actually, someone asked me yesterday, in fact, it was AFR News, to talk about McCabe, and I had sort of a brain freeze. It's like, wait a second, I've got to assimilate all the things about McCabe that I talked about, you know, a month, 2 months ago, and remember exactly to be able to detail who he is and what he's done. Andrew McCabe, of course, was the person who stepped. He was the deputy FBI director. So when James Comey was fired, Andrew McCabe took that position. And so he's been running the FBI before Christopher Wray was finally confirmed just a few months ago. Andy McCabe has been running the Bureau. And we have discussed him quite a bit, but I think it's time to just kind of remind you who Andrew McCabe was. Now, remember, Christopher Wray, the acting, the director now, fully director, not acting, didn't make any changes when he took over the FBI. And he's very good friends with all of these characters, which has been a tremendous concern and remains a concern, I have to tell you, even now. So Christopher Wray was called to the Capitol Sunday evening, went into the basement of the Capitol and read this four-page summary of intelligence reports, which was prepared by Devin Nunez and Trey Gowdy. And the very next morning, Andrew McCabe was released. Now, see if I can give you the exact wording on that. It says, this is from a high-level source. FBI director, Deputy Director McCabe's departure was not in the plans as of Friday. McCabe was told this morning to step down. A second source described McCabe's departure as being removed. All right, so I think we can pretty much be confident that Andrew McCabe was probably encouraged strongly to step aside as a result of Christopher Wray reading that memo. I mean, what else can we conclude? But that's exactly what we think happened. So why? What did McCabe do? Well, let's go back just a little bit and talk about what we know that we don't know what's in that memo yet, but what we know that Andrew McCabe did. This is not related to the memo or the Russian investigation, really, but sort of. It certainly relates to Mrs. Clinton's portion of this. And that is that Andrew McCabe, in his capacity as a deputy director of the FBI, had a wife who was approached by the governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe is a longtime Clinton confidant. He was the biggest fundraiser for Bill Clinton earlier, and I think he chaired Mrs. Clinton's campaign, not in 2016, I don't think. I'm sorry that I'm getting a little vague about it, but he's chaired one of her campaigns, very close to the Clintons for years. If you just Google, you'll see how close they have been. So Andrew McCabe's wife was recruited by Terry McAuliffe to run for Senate in Virginia. So Andrew McCabe, by the way, the rules of the FBI say that FBI agents cannot engage in political campaigns. Now, they can privately, but they cannot do it publicly. They can't advocate for candidates. So, I mean, they vote and they have opinions as private citizens, but they can't campaign. Well, we know that Andrew McCabe did campaign for his wife. It was on Facebook with buttons and all kinds of things. And we also know that he actually accompanied his wife to Kerry McAuliffe's office to make this deal. And the bargain was that McAuliffe gave him, all right, there are conflicting reports on this. I believe it was $700,000, but the friendly sources are saying, oh, no, it was only $500,000. So you take your pick, dollars to run in this Virginia race. Now, Virginia law says that if you, and other states do too, if you don't spend all the money that you are given or you have for campaign, you can keep it. I just want to add that. All right, so his wife is given this several hundred thousand dollars by Terry McAuliffe. The other part of this is that at the time that he met with McAuliffe, along with his wife, Terry McAuliffe, the governor, was under investigation by the FBI. Andrew McCabe was the deputy director of the FBI. Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, is under investigation. So they have this friendly little meeting where his wife gets several hundred thousand dollars from Terry McAuliffe. No, this is not good, but this is not, you know, this is just a little background on who Terry McAuliffe, who Andrew McCabe was. All right. So then we learn that not only that, but Andrew McCabe is the person in charge of the Clinton email scandal investigation. You think there might be a conflict there? But he never recused himself. No, he was in charge of the Clinton email investigation. We also know that when, these things we know for a fact, when President Trump was elected, it was Andrew McCabe. And I've told you this story, but I'm going to put it in context now. Remember that General Flynn was in the White House. He was only there, such a short time. And he was working with the FBI. They were coming in and organizing security for the White House, you know, doing tutorials, you know, working together to try to get, you know, the new administration up and running. So it was not unusual for the FBI to come into the White House and have conversations with them. So General Flynn receives a call from Andrew McCabe saying, hey, want to come over and see you? And maybe I think he says a couple of agents are coming, something to that effect. And so General Flynn thinks that they're coming like they've been coming to talk about, you know, security, the broader issues in the White House. But no, they come into his office and they begin to turn the interrogation on General Flynn. General Flynn had no attorney with him. He had no White House attorney, no personal attorney. And so it was during that interaction, which they had, I believe, taped. But that was the beginning of entrapping, really, General Flynn. And so, and also I know that on a FBI conference call sometime after that, I don't know how broad it was, but there were agents from around the country. McCabe was leading it, some of the leadership. And the news came down during the call that Flynn had been indicted, and McCabe high-fived and said something. I don't remember exactly what, but something to indicate how happy he was that General Flynn was taken down. Of course, he had something to do with that. And he also certainly had an opinion, didn't he, about General Flynn. So the other part that we know, I remember this too, and you will, hopefully, you'll remember this as well. Do you recall when this whole Russian collusion story first broke? There was a story in the New York Times, and it alleged that Donald Trump had been colluding with the Russians, and blah, I don't even know what all. It said, you know, it was the beginning of the story. It said they had four sources. Turns out the four sources, I think two were Obama, had been in the Obama administration. The other, I don't remember what the details of that were. But it was all, you know, conveniently, people who wanted to destroy President Trump were the unnamed sources. So, Andrew McCabe was at the White House for some sort of meeting, and he pulled Reince Priebus apart. Do you remember this? Pulled him aside? Do you remember that? And he said to Reince Priebus, you know that story that just came out in the New York Times? That's all, and in the initials for the term is BS. That's all BS. Nothing to worry about. That's all BS. And remember the story that Reince Priebus then said, well, if it's all BS, the FBI knows that it's all BS, can you guys issue a statement? Because we're taking a ton of heat here. And so Andrew McCabe says, well, I'll get back to you on that. A few days later, he gets back to him and says, no, we can't do that. We can't issue a statement. And then James Comey calls Reince Priebus and says, no, we can't issue a statement on that. You know, hopefully the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee will come out and they'll sort this thing out. No, we can't say anything about that. But then what happened after that? So Reince Priebus is taking a ton of heat. Now, I was not a Reince fan, but it is true that he was taking a ton of heat for a lot of things. Okay, so the reason he started really taking heat was because CNN then came out and reported that Reince Priebus had called the FBI and tried to dissuade them from releasing information about some Trump-Russian collusion. So now, people investigating this feel certain that Rod Rosenstein or James Comey was the leaker to CNN to make it sound as though the White House had been the ones initiating this conversation with the FBI to try to talk them out of making this Russian collusion story a big deal. Do you see how this works? Do you see how this works? Much like the Fusion GPS dossier, using it, knowing it's a lie, helping pay for it, working with the Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC to prepare this nonsense National Enquirer story about Donald Trump and his so-called collusion, and then using that to go into the FISA court the secret court, presenting this to the judge as though it's factual, getting warrants to wiretap and invade the privacy of private citizens like Donald Trump Jr., like Carter Page, like Paul Manafort, like the president himself. Remember, then the president came out and said, we've been wiretapped. And everybody, oh, how ridiculous. How ridiculous. Well, we know now this is how it happened. There's a lot more to the story, so much more. But this was McCabe. Andrew McCabe was the one overseeing Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. He was, remember, and we'll get to them in a second. You know very well who they are. Strzok was the head of the intelligence part of the foreign intelligence part of the FBI. And Lisa Page was the attorney for guess who? Andrew McCabe. So they're the ones whose email we have been talking about so much. They're the ones that had an affair. They're the ones that refer to this insurance policy when they were in Andy's office, the discussion of an insurance policy in case Donald Trump should win. You see, this is just, I believe this is what we call collusion. I believe this is what we call collusion. And so the memo that will detail, we think, many of these things will be coming out this coming weekend. That's what I think, unless the president should surprise us all and say no, then they'll have to go back to Congress and get a vote on it. So that's how it's developing here. Now, Rod Rosenstein, he has been, you should see, Andy McCarthy has written an article addressing Rosenstein's part in all of this. And I guess Andy's pretty mild in this compared to how I feel about it. Not that that matters, but his title is Rod Rosenstein is shirking his duty to supervise Robert Mueller. And Andy paints, you remember Rod Rosenstein is the person in charge with the Russian investigation since Jeff Sessions recused himself. Okay. So Rosenstein basically is doing nothing. That's what Andy lays out here. And he's letting Bob Mueller run crazy. And Andy had already made a statement in an earlier column that the president should refuse to be questioned by Mueller. And I'll read his exact statements, because it would be wrong for Mueller to seek to interview the president of the United States unless he can first show cause that, number one, a serious crime implicating the president has been committed. And number two, the president is possessed of testimony that is both essential to proving the crime and unobtainable by alternative means. So Andy's saying special prosecutors don't just pull a president in to just chat and try to find out what he might know about something. There has to be a really good reason. But Andy's point is Rod Rosenstein seems to be taking a completely hands-off approach, is not stopping Robert Mueller as he should. The Justice Department is supposed to be supervising the special prosecutor. And he said a special prosecutor, if a prosecutor is given carte blanche to interview anybody about anything under oath, it's such a dangerous situation. And the Justice Department is required to oversee the investigation. Let me read his final paragraph here. It is Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's job to force Mueller to make that showing. In other words, show that there's some reason, cause, there's some crime, there's something the president can add. That duty trumps whatever hands-off promises he may have made to Democrats. He's talking about Rod Rosenstein. He claims earlier that Rod made a deal with Democrats to be fair in this investigation. So his idea of fairness is just to do nothing. If the Justice Department will not supervise its prosecutors, then presidents, former presidents, other high public officials, journalists, defense lawyers, and all sorts of interesting people who might have relevant information, but who are protected from harassment by over-aggressive prosecutors, thanks to prudent Justice Department leadership and policy, should plan on spending lots of time in the grand jury. And that's Andy's article on this. We'll put this on our Facebook page. Rod Rosenstein is shirking his duty to supervise Robert Mueller. So here, it looks like this memo may reveal the things that the complicity of Rod Rosenstein, that may bring him down. We can only pray so. I'm certainly praying so. He needs to be out of there. And it's already Andrew McCabe has just stepped down. But I think there are a lot more heads that should roll over this. There's just no question about it. When we return, I have some stuff that's in my box, brand new stuff that you will not have heard. So just stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The truth will set you free. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. California has enacted the FACT Act, which forces pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to prominently display notices informing clients that California offers low-cost and even free abortions, and list the phone numbers to contact the abortion clinics. This case is more egregious and potentially has more far-reaching implications for free speech and religious liberty than the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. Pro-life pregnancy centers are required to direct women to abortion clinics. The National Institute of Family and Life Advocates has sued California in NIFLA versus Becerra, which has reached the Supreme Court. Please pray for this case.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
As a 10-year-old boy, my dad and our whole family started back to church.
Bert Harper on the Word of God.
And the church I went to, the pastor really preached the Word of God with conviction. I knew that it was a book that we could depend upon and live our lives by. And I hope I bring that same passion into exploring the Word.
Exploring the Word with Bert Harper and Alex McFarland. Weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
We're in the financial business. We manage a couple of trusts and some estates and, of course, our own monies, too.
Courtney Trotter talks about the charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation.
I understand annuities about as much as anyone, I guess, can. So I just felt the charitable gift annuity was a win-win situation for many people that still are generating income and still have assets. Because you never know when you may have to draw down on something like that. And if you don't ever have to, then it's even a better gift to get to a really good foundation like AFA. A very solid investment, a good way to help do the Lord's work, and it's there to help us as well.
Find out if the charitable gift annuity can work for you by calling the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. For those of us who have long admired the Federal Bureau of Investigation and understand its important role in protecting national security and public safety, yesterday was a red letter one. First, Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe was finally forced to resign. He epitomized the politicization of the Bureau's senior management that has hampered its performance under former directors Robert Mueller and James Comey and undermined the American people's confidence in the organization. Second, the House Intelligence Committee voted to release a memo that exposes apparently politically motivated domestic surveillance and other malfeasance on the part of FBI officials on Andy McCabe's watch. Unsurprisingly, Democrats who have been the principal beneficiaries of such politicization for years now are complaining that these efforts to end it are themselves exercises in partisanship. Get the facts out and let the American people decide. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
He's Sandy Rios back with you on a different note, more serious actually, and profoundly encouraging is a new movie that the American Family Studios has just produced called The God Who Speaks. You've been hearing about it in little drop-ins, commercials, but it's just now being released this week. It's going to feature so many people that you and I both know and love. Alistair Begg, a D.A. Carson of Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, Josh McDowell, Alex McFarlane, Al Mohler, Frank Turek, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, and they will be talking about how do we know that the Bible is God's Word? Has anyone ever asked you that? Have you ever wondered, you know, when you read those passages in the Song of Solomon, or if you Song of Solomon, or if you hear, you know, read in the early, like in Genesis, the account of Moses and Sapphira, all the strange things. You know, how do we know that this kind of a book with all of these stories put together, how do we know that they come from God? How can we rely on these scriptures? The God Who Speaks, it's a 90-minute documentary, beautifully produced, 23 respected apologists, scholars, and pastors. It also talks about just biblical authority. So I just want to tell you that you can see the trailer and find out how to get it at thegodwhospeaks.org. Thegodwhospeaks.org. This will be a great tool for you to use with yourselves. First of all, go to school, you know, show it to your family. Watch it, take notes, and equip yourself to make the case. And also just if you're a skeptic or if you don't believe it, you know, then you can make notes to refute it. Yeah, good luck with that, but do it. So the God Who Speaks, thegodwhospeaks.org is where you go. Hang on a second. Let me get that right. Yeah, thegodwhospeaks.org is the place that you go to check that out and watch the trailer and order it. I think you're going to be just blown away. All right, well, some people are blown away by the release of this memo. One of them is Nancy Pelosi, who I think she said 14 times in this interview that the Republicans were lying, that this memo, there was no truth to it. Let's just say she emphasized it frequently. Let's listen, clip 5.
And what they're putting forth is a total misrepresentation. It is false. And they're putting it out there as if it is factual and then saying, we're going to show this to the American people, but we're not going to show the rebuttal to it by the Democrats. And this isn't to be politicized. This is about fact. It's about evidence, about data. It's not about making up a false memo based on a false premise that the chairman hasn't even read and then to put it out there. Of course not.
Well, then why are they so anxious to release it?
Because it's not even true. It's not even true. They have made up a memo that isn't even true, and they're lying to the American
people. So what are you going to do about it?
So the interesting thing is, you know, you might listen to that and say, oh, she's, you know, if you don't like Nancy Pelosi, then you say, well, she's a little batty. You know, why does she keep saying that? But actually, she's very, very smart. She is a leftist par excellence. She knows exactly what she's doing because she's branding in people's minds, which is what the left is trying to do before it's ever released, that this memo is false. It's a political document. It has no connection with the truth. It's just false. You can't trust it. So that's why she said it 14 times in such a short period of time in that interview, that it was in some form or fashion lied, made up, not facts, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You fill in the blank. That was Nancy Pelosi being actually very shrewd, as a leftist goes. Very smart, very tactical. Branding in your minds, just like President Obama branded in our minds that people who came across the border illegally were dreamers. They weren't lawbreakers. They weren't. There were no criminals. You know, MS-13 gang members, smugglers, and who knows who else? No, they're dreamers. You see, they're dreamers. You see, this is how it happens. They pick out words. Just like, I mean, should I illustrate it further? You are not a pro tearing apart a baby in a womb or brutally suctioning it out. You're not that. You are pro-choice. You are pro-choice. You're pro-choice after all. You see, this is how it goes. So dreamers, pro-choice, and then branding this memo as lies and deceit and a political document. This is what they're doing. And they're doing it very well. So just know that as you start hearing information, when they cannot stop something, then they try to confuse and obfuscate. That's the method that they use. It's interesting, this little clip of Barack Obama when he was president, how he felt. Well, we think maybe sort of like this is at least something he said, whether he thought it or not. Let's listen.
The only people who don't want to disclose the truth are people with something to hide.
Yeah, well, I think he probably knew a little bit about that. Well, Trey Gowdy was one with Devin Nunez is the one that prepared this four-page summary. And so he was on with Chris Wallace on Sunday. And Trey kind of, you know, what he's doing is he's kind of giving you an idea of what's in the memo without telling you what's in the memo. So let's listen.
This memo is nothing but a the distilling, the reducing of thousands of pages of documents provided to us by the department and the bureau. So there's nothing in this memo that the department is not already aware of. If you think your viewers want to know whether or not the dossier was used in court proceedings, whether or not it was vetted before it was used, whether or not it's ever been vetted, if you are interested in who paid for the dossier, if you're interested in Christopher Steele's relationship with Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee, then yes, you'll want the memo to come out. If you're Adam Schiff, who is consistently wrong when it comes to issues of disclosure, he didn't want us to find out any of this information, Chris. He fought. In fact, GPS went to court. Fusion GPS went to court to keep us from finding out that the Democrats paid for the dossier. So if you're Adam Schiff, of course you don't want the information to come out. You didn't want us to find it in the first place. This answers what I think are really legitimate questions, and I do think the FBI should look at it before it is released. And I have provided that counsel to Chairman Nunes, and I think that he has taken that under advisement. So I want to play face-up poker. I want the Bureau to know everything that's in the memo. I think you'll be surprised. It is not a hit piece on the department and the FBI.
That's enough. We got the idea. The thing of it is, my understanding of this memo is it's going to be a great deal more broad than the misdeeds of FBI and justice officials. And so just stay tuned and we'll see. Now, this morning, I just received information. Christopher Steele was the British agent who allegedly prepared that tabloid dossier that was used and claimed to be fact by FBI agents who went into the FISA court, federal surveillance something, intelligence surveillance, I don't know what the A stands for, FISA court, that top secret court, and presented it as though it were fact in order to get permission to wiretap and invade the privacy of then-candidate Donald Trump and his staff. I don't know who all, but we know Carter Page, we know Paul Manafort, we know that it was Don Jr. We don't even know who else they surveilled. I'm sure they didn't just stop with that. But they got permission by lying about the validity of this. It was Chris Steele, the British agent. And by the way, they went through the British intelligence agencies to wiretap. They used the British intelligence agency, I can't think of the acronym for it, a CIA station in Maryland, at least one of our posts, to operate out of, and they conducted the surveillance. They surveilled, remember, they wiretapped General Flynn. And it's just, I could get sidetracked on that, and I don't want to. Let me just say that the reason they did that was because they knew legally that they could not do it. So they had the British do it. Then they had the British former spy Christopher Steele prepare this tabloid dossier. And somewhere along the line, Senator Grassley, I knew this but didn't know why, he made a criminal referral on Christopher Steele, the British intelligence agent, for making false statements to the FBI. Now we know this morning, according to this early report, Paul Sperry is saying that the Steele lied to FBI affiants who swore out affidavit for FISA warrant on Page, telling them that he had not shared the dossier information included in the application with media. Christopher Steele tells the FBI he hadn't, or whoever he's swearing before, that he had not told anyone in the media. We know that's totally false. They gave it to all kinds of media. We know that John McCain did his part in this too. But Christopher Steele, it was his work. So he most certainly made sure that media had it, because it was something that the DNC and the Hillary campaign wanted to get into media in order to destroy candidate Donald Trump. So the point of the reason that's important is because you have to understand that that dossier was a political document designed to destroy the candidate. It was not. Look, when our intelligence agencies compare a report, wouldn't you like to think that they actually are going for the information and the truth with blinders on, not having a political bias? That if indeed a candidate had cooperated with the Russians, they would, yes, of course we'd want to know. But that they would want to use honest sources, but they didn't want honest sources. They were colluding, as it were, with the Russians. And I'll make the case for that in this next article. This is interesting to me because the Wall Street Journal has been no fan of Donald Trump. They were, I would say many of the Wall Street Journal's were lists were never Trumpers. But that's not important. Honestly, it doesn't mean they are on his team now. But I can tell you that they're writing, they wrote this long article, Fusions, Russian, Dirty Work. I cannot possibly go into the details of this, but let me just say that they make, and rightly make, if I had time, I would, the conclusion that Christopher Steele and the owner of Fusion GPS, hired by the DNC and Hillary Clinton, and paid, by the way, by the FBI too, were colluding with the Russians. Fusion GPS was absolutely colluding with the Russians. They lay down the groundwork on that. And you can, I'll put this, we'll put this article on our Facebook page, Fusion's Russian Dirty Work. But I want to get to this last article because it's important too this morning. Let's see. Let me do the best I can here. Going back to the text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, and this has to do with obstruction of trying to bring down Donald Trump very blatantly. This is an email that was read by Bob Goodlatte, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, on the House floor a few nights ago. This is Peter Strzok's email or text. Thing is, there are very inflammatory things in the 302s. That's the reports of these FBI interrogations. That's the famous, that's their official form. Very inflammatory things in the 302s we didn't turn over to Congress because they weren't relevant to understanding the focus of the investigation, that are going to come out in the FOIA and absolutely inflame Congress. I'm sure Jim and Tricia and Dave and Mike are all considering how things like that play out as they talk amongst themselves. So what Peter Strzok is talking about that we are learning is that during the time when Peter Strzok interrogated Hillary, interrogated Ha, that would be like an overstatement, had a little chat with Mrs. Clinton, 2 hours, which they didn't record, did not put her under oath. They did not, when they were asked to turn over their notes from that, remember they concluded that no charges, remember James Comey, no reasonable prosecutor would ever bring charges against Mrs. Clinton. Now we know that Peter Strzok was telling us, because they've tracked down the timeline, that they removed damning things from the FBI's notes and reports, things that she said, things that they asked her. Those things were all removed from the release to the governing agencies that had requested them, including the Congress. By the way, Congress, by the way, is in charge of the FBI, not every single member, but their committees who are, or the Intelligence Committee is over the function of these intelligence agencies. It's the people's elected representatives who are to oversee these intelligence gatherings. It's not, they don't have freedom to just do whatever they want. They're not an island. And by the way, they come under the president's control. They are not controlled. There are barriers so that he's not using it for his personal gain. But he is technically very much their boss, and they do not have carte blanche to do whatever they want and erase and hide whatever they want. So I'm going to read this synopsis. FBI agent Peter Strzok is admitting in the September 10th text message that there are details within the interview of Hillary Clinton that he and others intentionally withheld from the September 2nd, 2016 release. Again, he said there were very inflammatory things within it. And then they go through and track who these, it was James Baker, chief legal counsel for FBI Director James Comey, and Tricia Beth Anderson, who was hired for DOJ by Attorney General Eric Holder from Eric Holder's law firm. All of them working together in the FBI to disguise and obfuscate and prevent the American people from knowing what really happened in that interview. I could go on, but I'm going to stop for today. But as we watch the State of the Union address tonight, and we watch this memo as it unfolds, and we see the left trying to discredit and call it lies, you'll kind of understand, at least I hope, in a more a full-on way of what exactly what's happening here. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.